Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
The Larry Kudlow Show. Free market prosperity starts here. Now, here's Larry Kudlow.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. We'll reset. Join us during the week. Fox Business Network. The name of the show is Kudlow. 4 to 5 p.m. every day, Monday through Friday. And by the way, you can get us here on the radio and the internet, live streaming the internet, LarryKudlowShow.com, LarryKudlowShow.com. You can hear us throughout the country. Actually, we've got about 150 affiliates now. I mean, that's pretty much right there, but you can get even more on the internet and around the globe and throughout the solar system and the Milky Way. So let's do some stock market work. Pretty good week for stocks. Dow was up over 1,000 points. NASDAQ up 398, almost 400 points. The S&P up 138 points. And for the quarter, the first quarter, the Dow was kind of flat, but the NAS was up almost 17%. And the S&P 500, the broad index, was up 7%. So from the last two economists that were on in the segment before this, Bailout Nation is working. Stocks like bailouts. The banking crisis may be over. Whatever you own, they're going to bail you out. Deposits, bonds, stocks. What a great country this is. Big government socialism. So we have David Bahnsen, who's the founder and managing partner of the Bahnsen Group, and he's the author of There's No Free Lunch, 250 Economic Truths. I wonder if one of them bail everybody out. And he has a video series. It's called No Free Lunch. It's a six-part series in defense of free markets. I'm for that. We just don't have any. And Jim Urio, director, TJM Institutional Services, Chicago's leading restaurateur. And he's, you know, they got maybe a new mayor coming up. When's that election?
April 4th, I believe, this week. Paul Vallis versus Brandon Johnson. Brandon Johnson was one of these defund the police guys.
Yeah.
And, he's trying to pretend he wasn't. Like, there's just all this video evidence. Of what the heck was that even supposed to mean, defund the police? But anyway, let's not get me going on that.
He's the teachers union guy, right? The teachers union owns him, right?
They owned him. They gave him like $3 million. And all of the top five donors are all the big unions. It's absolutely crazy.
And the other guy is... what, a reformed socialist, or what is he? He's like,
okay, as long as it's just you and me and there's nobody listening.
Nobody.
He sounded a lot like a Republican a couple of years ago,
yeah.
And now I like him. I've done some work with him on the radio station here, Salem Radio in Chicago, and he's a good guy. He used to say some really good things, and now he's saying some really weird things, but I think that's what you got to do to get elected in Chicago.
Yeah, I think he's about 8 basis points better than the teachers union guy. That's
without any question.
And David Bahnsen, stock. Stocks love bailouts. Bonds love bailouts. Everybody loves bailouts. Bailout Nation. What do you make of this? I mean, look, no free lunch video series. I'm for that. But what about the rest of the country, David?
Well, I guess it depends on what we think is getting bailed out, Larry. I mean, Silicon Valley Bank is at $0 a share where it belongs. There were, at the beginning of March, some equity holders of Silicon Valley Bank, including the team that worked there, that were really wealthy, and they're broke now. The bondholders, their bonds are at 0 cents on the dollar. So there's no bailout for them. But, you know, the Fed sort of existed for a few decades now as a quasi-bailout nation, and it turns up and down at different times, and no one knows exactly what the rules are. And I think that there is an ambiguity underlying the financial system, and it did not start a month ago. Started at the financial crisis. Some would argue it started before that. But we are living in weird times.
Yeah, well, so basically, you're right. The Silicon Valley people got hurt. But Yellen especially, that they're basically guaranteeing all deposits now. That's basically the way I read it. And then the Fed's going to buy your bonds back. They may be worth 80 cents, but they're going to buy it at a par at 100 cents on the dollar. So those Silicon Valley guys just got hurt, but everybody else is okay.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that we're talking about two different things, Larry. The issue of the Treasury bonds are not credit impaired, right? It is a duration risk, and we've just simply never seen something where a bank goes down with no impairment, no credit impairment whatsoever.
Right.
No missed principal payments, no missed interest payments. It wasn't broken commercial real estate. It wasn't broken subprime mortgage. It wasn't broken high yield, like the savings and loan. And yet, because people were running these things, it weren't running at mark to market, and duration had killed them. Interest rates had skyrocketed higher. They weren't hedging. And so the Fed comes in and makes them whole on a par basis. I think that Janet Yellen is wrong to leave it implicit. If they want to say we're going to explicitly back all depositors, then fine, let them say it, and then let's figure out how they plan to pay for that, what the charge to the banking system will be. But what I learned from Fannie and Freddie is the only thing worse than bailing out and the only thing worse than not bailing out is sort of bailing out and never really telling anyone what the rules are. That's what we're doing now.
Some people would say it was pretty explicit, but it wasn't formally put into place. But look, this is a great country.
There's only two banks in the country that the depositors right now have been told they're backed. And I agree with you that the rest, there's no way if another bank went down, they wouldn't do it.
Right.
But that's not explicit. It's implicit.
Yeah. Okay. Big government socialism. Is that explicit or implicit?
Both. Is it my turn?
Yes,
both.
It's your turn.
It's both. But just to add on what you guys are saying, how about at the beginning when Janet Yellen looked us all in the eye and said, if you banked at a bank that was insignificant, any small community bank or regional bank, you weren't going to be backed, and the only people who were going to be the huge banks that couldn't fail, in her opinion. I mean, that was chilling to me. It was like, what are you trying to do here? Have everybody pull their deposits out from local community banks, particularly companies that are running their payrolls out of those and flocking to Bank of America just because you can control Bank of America better? It's amazing to me that she said that, and I know she's backed off it, but I kind of think, is she just a knucklehead, or is she just someone who really wants to drive everything into the top 10 banks so they can control them a lot easier? And I do think it's a little bit of both. But to your point, Bailout Nation, I think it's sad as heck, and you and I have actually been discussing this probably for 20 years, that I think Fed liquidity, bailouts, injecting money in the system is good for the stock market. It's sad that I think that. Like, it's nothing like enthusiastic about buying the stock market, but I do think if the stock market has a good week next week, I think it's more important than all these terrible fundamental things we are seeing where the market is complacent, believing that the bank problem is totally corralled right now, which I think is nonsense. But I do think the stocks could do well. I want to see some strength on Monday and Tuesday, but it's interesting to me.
Well, that's important. That's important because it finished the week strong. David Bunson, do you think the stock market is poised for more of a rally, whatever the rationale may be?
Yeah, I think that a lot of the market probably is still, like I was commenting in my weekly bulletin, energy stocks are trading at 9x earnings.
Mm.
9x. It's barely half of its historical multiple. The tech side is back up to 24x. I think that's gotten frothy again, and there's always a sort of cool factor or popularity factor with some of that, and it's not the pool we swim in. But I do think that fundamentally, earnings are going to be very interesting this quarter, more than last quarter. The second quarter that will report first quarter results is going to give us a better chance to see where guidance is coming. And then now I do think that we're either at the point of a Fed pause or eventually a Fed reduction in rates. And the markets are going to be pricing that way ahead of time. And so there's just a very interesting dynamic where I got to say the bears have had a very difficult time because they used two different rationales to say why we were going to drop thousands of points. And neither one came together.
What you mean when you say the profits are going to be interesting? You mean interesting up or down?
I think that profits are going to be unimpressive as far as year-over-year growth, but not showing a big deterioration. And you really need a deterioration of profits to give the bears something to cheer about.
Jim Murio, to David's point, a pause and then Fed rates come down. The last segment we had Mike Faulkender and John Carney. They felt that the Fed's target rate was going to go up and that the inflation numbers, we got a fresh batch of them, the February personal income statement. You know, it's still running 4.5% to 5% inflation. The target is 2%. And they think there's a disconnect between bond trading and maybe stock trading and what the Fed is actually going to do. Because that, I mean, some of these markets are pricing in, as David just said, a pause and then a series of rate cuts. They didn't think so. Which side of that trade are you on?
You know, if I can't decide, I'm on the side of the market. And not only is the market saying rate eases, they're saying 150 points of eases by a year from this coming summer. So, I mean, it's not as significant. And again, if you look historically, tightening cycles are usually met very quickly with easing cycles. And the reason that is because there's a tremendous lag effect to the tool that they use. These rate hikes, so inflation's coming down. You just acknowledge that. I believe that too. So then you must ask yourself the question, how much of that inflation coming down is from healing the supply chains, is from the federal government who's still acting in opposition to inflation coming down, but is not giving as much money to people who are spending it quickly. So those things are kind of coming off. M2 growth is coming down. So have the rate hikes even really hit us yet? If there's a 6 to 9 month lag time, and some of them obviously haven't, it's probably less of a lag time now than it used to be. But I think the Fed won't go anymore. And I do think the Fed will probably be easing, maybe not to the tune of 150 base points. But I think if they're smart, they'll see what's going on. Inflation is coming down. Supply routes are healing a bit. I think if they're smart, they won't do anything.
You know, it's interesting, sort of like, what is the Fed watching? Because the M2 money supply growth has come down. It's really plunging. The leading indicators index is plunging. These Fed manufacturing surveys are plunging. And, of course, the yield curve is deeply inverted. So, David Monson, those are, I guess one would say, forward-looking indicators, which the central bank could and probably should look at them, but I don't think they do. I mean, they probably look, they just look at, I don't even know sometimes what they look at, but they do have this PCE deflator target, which is still hovering close to 5%. So it's like, what should they do?
Well, what they should do and what they will do and what they have done are all three different things. And as far as I'm concerned, what they should do is become humble and not believe that they're supposed to be the adjudicator of financial markets or the adjudicator of what the cost of capital ought to be. I do not believe that they were the primary cause of the inflation that we had, and I do not believe they're the primary cause of the inflation coming down. And my concern now is that we are reiterating this idea that the Fed is a deity, that the Fed is able to cure things that they're not able to cure. And because of my belief that I'm a supply-sider to the core, inspired and mentored by my hero, Larry Kudlow, I think that the lack of production of goods and services for a two-year period of unforgivable lockdowns was the primary cause of inflation. And the Fed couldn't do anything about that with the interest rate. In housing, I think that it was the cost of capital was a big factor. But other than that, I really believe that the Fed is being given deity-like powers that they don't deserve. What they ought to do is nothing whatsoever at the next meeting. And then basically, Larry, what they're going to do is start to push rates down when they realize that we're in a Japan-like cycle of not being able to get the economic growth we need to get. We don't have enough supply side aspects in the economy that will allow us to see 3 to 4% real GDP growth. And that's what we have to get to. The government can't afford the debt. And that's the Herb Stein line I got to come back to. If something can't happen, it won't. They can't leave the Fed funds rate at 5%. Okay, our country's bond portfolio, our debt profile is very short duration. And as these bonds are now reinvesting at very,
very high rates of interest. The government can't afford it. Therefore, the Fed will not allow it to happen.
Well, I think asking the Fed for a dose of humility is a noble statement. But
it's a tall order, though.
But I think the Fed will never have a dose of humility.
Can I push back on what David said just for a second
sure.
there real quick?
Go right ahead.
Okay, so you said that the supply chain locking everything down caused all the caused the greatest amount of the inflation. And actually, I agree with you, too. But I do think it's a little too forgiving. In June of 2021, when CPI had already printed 5%, the housing market was clearly on this parabolic run hotter. The Fed said it was transitory and then still bought $250 billion just of mortgage backs to support a housing market that was already flying. So even if the Fed is down your list of inflation causers, they certainly didn't do what they were supposed to do when the door was open a crack. Do you acknowledge that?
Well, Jim, of course I do, but I think it's different than blaming them for piling on versus causing it. In other words, if what we're saying is a fire started and they didn't start the fire, but they came and poured gasoline on it, I'm totally with you.
Good.
Now, that buying of mortgage, the buying of mortgage bonds, to me, did not exacerbate house prices going up. It's even worse than that. It did nothing whatsoever. It was totally unhelpful, unnecessary, and basically distortive in financial markets. So this is one of the criticisms I've had with my friends on the right, Jim, through this period, is I want to hammer the Fed for exacerbating boom-bust cycles, for distorting markets, for intervening where they need not intervene.
That's what they do.
That's different than blaming them for the inflation. I think.
Well, I'll blame them for the inflation. I mean, I think
they're one of the causes.
I think fiscal and monetary policy, both sides, were vastly overly stimulative, going back to late 2020, early 21. Both sides. I agree that this. I think the supply shortages played a role, but I think the Fed monetized that every step of the way, and I think government spending was actually in this particular cycle. The increase in government spending, which essentially shoveled money into people's pockets and their deposits, was monetized by the Fed. So I would give them the bulk, the two sides, government spending and monetary policy, I would give them the bulk of the blame. But we have to take a quick break. We've got to take a quick break. Come back. You can argue against it. David Bonson of the Bonson Group, Jim Urio of TJM Institutional Services. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
This is the Larry Kudlow Show.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank
Radio 77 WABC.
Welcome back, folks. We're talking stocks. We've got Dave Bonson of the Bonson Group, and we've got Jim Urio of TJM Institutional Services. You know, Jim Urio, it's interesting that last week, energy led the list, up 6%, but you got a lot of economic sensitive stuff, which surprises me. Consumer discretionary up 5.6%, materials up 4.9%, industrials up 4.4%. Those are the big leaders. So that's sort of, I mean, you could say that's forecasting an economic rebound. I don't see an economic rebound. I see an economic decline, but I may well be wrong. What do you think about that?
No, I agree with you on that, too. And I'm not switching over to those sectors yet. And, you know, what I've liked the most since October has been, gold, silver, and copper. And copper, I know, kind of falls into that, too. But it was kind of a play on China and, decarbonization movements throughout the world, too. So I'm still mostly on those. Now, crude has jumped into my list, too, technically. And I'm not sure if it's a rebound thing, too, because part of it is China. Part of it is the fact that at some point in time, the U.S. is going to announce that they have to buy back some of the SPR. And I think that could move well. But I want to settle maybe above 85, but then I think we could head up to 100 again in crude within the next 6 months, maybe 8 months.
You know, there was a good piece. I can't remember where I saw this piece that just said basically the election, the midterm elections were, I won't say won, but Democrats outperformed expectations. And the principal reason for that was the lower gasoline prices, which were coming down a lot. In the second half of last year, because of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve sales. I mean, it was, just a politically manipulated market.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how huge a part it played, but it definitely played a part.
Yeah.
And that is, it's completely reprehensible to think about that. They can sell our stuff that we own just to get them a better spot in the election. I'm just amazed that that was happening when it was.
You're
it's
right.
Crazy.
I mean, and, you know, David Bongson, it was absolute political interference. Whatever weight you give to it insofar as the drop in gasoline prices are concerned. And now, so you got it down. Well, of course, oil prices have come back a little bit. I mean, they're in the mid to low 60s. At one point, crude has closed at 75, 67. Brent is a little higher, 79, call it $80. But I don't know. Do you think they'll buy it back? They buy it back, it's possible gasoline prices will go up. I mean, the way the Bidens see the world, again, this is bailout nation. They may not buy it back. We just damaged our strategic petroleum reserve energy security.
Yeah, well, Secretary Granholm said they'd be buying it back at 70, 71. They had an order on the books in January when it hit that price that they canceled. It was 8 days ago, a whopping 8 days ago, that it was at 66.
Yep.
There were no orders. It's come back to 75. This is one of the great secrets in oil markets. Everyone knows that there's a bid, a floor. They have to be refilling SPR. Mm. So will they try to delay it? I'm sure they will. But at some point, some administration's got to fill that up. And our U.S. oil company's got to meet that order.
All right, kids. Thank you very much, Dave Bongson and Jim Yurio. Folks, stick around. We're going to do some money in politics with Hogan Gidley and Steve Moore. I'm Kudlow.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.